It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Good evening and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham with me, JJ and this Yobi. You're with Talk on TV, on radio, online and on your smart speaker. Coming up, in Scotland, new hate crime laws come into effect today despite widespread condemnation as critics say they could have a chilling effect on freedom of speech. It's total Tory wipeout as a new poll reveals the Conservatives are on course for their worst ever general election results. And the King has returned with an Easter walkabout telling well-wishers that he's doing his best. Good evening, Britain, and welcome to the Independent Republic of JJ and this Yobi. Mr. Graham is still away this week, so my reign as acting dictator continues, and I've got a blockbuster of a show for you. First up, the Ginger Whinger and his wife have been named the joke of Hollywood. We'll discuss Prince Harry and Meghan Markle with Kinsey Schofield. Plus, find out why Rishi Sunak is in the doghouse with his own party over a new crime bill. And the Queen of Darkness, Mrs. Sharon Osbourne, will be live here later in the show. This is the Independent Republic. Let's get it on. A controversial new law to tackle hate crime comes into effect in Scotland today, the Hate Crime and Public Order Act. The bill piggybacks off of existing legislation on the offence of stirring up racial hatred, extending it to the protected characteristics of disability, religion, sexual orientation, age and transgender identity. And for anyone found to be committing a crime motivated by hatred towards those characteristics, a harsher sentence will be given too. I'm joined now by former political editor of The Sun, Trevor Kavanagh. Trevor, good evening, mate. Does this bill stifle freedom of speech?
I think it might, JJ. it's not as if the police have got nothing else to do, is it? Although they've abdicated recently any intention of following up any minor crimes, as they call it, like burglary and other things, which really annoy people. And so they've got an extra 500 cops, don't know where they come from, to look into hate crime, which is a horrible expression in itself and should be banned as an expression of hatred all by itself. And so anybody, including wives, children, family, visitors around the dinner table, will be able to anonymously accuse innocent people in some cases. Some people will be guilty, but mostly people will be simply making inadvertent remarks which are going to be reported to specially designated centres, about 400 of them dotted around Scotland, including a sex shop for some reason, where they can claim that someone's uttered words which are forms of hatred against anyone of several different forms like race, gender, probably obesity, anything you like that you feel you've been offended by. And then the police have to and have promised they will investigate. They will drop all other investigations and look into your potentially entirely petulant grievance.
That seems crazy. So the bill's going to allow people to be called out for what they could say even in their own homes. So if I'm sat at home and I say, that Mike Graham is a bit of a fatty, isn't he? He could lose some weight. Someone in my house could call up the police, if we were in Scotland, and report me for that.
Yes, indeed. And as I say, the police have promised to investigate every single allegation. I'm delighted to hear that one of the prime targets, not because I want her to be, is J.K. Rowling, the Harry Potter genius, and she has vowed that she will fight any attempt to prosecute her. Now, she could become the very first test case to this stupid law, and with her resources and her access to the finest legal brains in the world, if not Scotland, will be able to contest and, I think, defeat any attempt to prosecute her.
It seems that every kind of possible characteristic is being protected. However, being a woman is not protected by this law.
No, and this is the whole point about the trans issue. The idea that anyone who wants to be defined as a woman can do so and therefore enter women's only spaces or compete in women's only sport are made to be as ludicrous as they are. So they can be regarded. Where do we start with the case of the rapist that claimed to be a woman and has had repeated rape charges proved against
him? Isla Bryson, you mean?
Isla Bryson.
Yeah.
Isla Bryson and even Yousaf Humad, the leader of the SNP in Scotland, is up for hate crimes against her by saying that she wasn't a proper woman. So, you know, this is the whole point about this law is that it's almost incomprehensible to the point where the police cannot police it.
So will they just apply some common sense here? Because as we're talking about Isla Bryson or Adam Graham, as I prefer to call him or her, Isla Bryson, double rapist, turned up to court in, I remember the picture, a very tight pair of purple leggings. You could see her penis. So surely, if I was in Scotland and I said, no, that's not a woman, that is a man, and then somebody tells the police, JJ just misgendered that woman who's a double rapist, surely the police would look at that case and say, actually, and on this occasion, JJ is, there's no charges to press against him.
Well, I would hope so, JJ, but the thing is that you've actually just hit on a very important issue here. This alleged woman has a penis. And the Labour leader, Sir Keir Starmer, suggests that tens of thousands of people who are men but proclaim to be women have penises. So is this going to remain in Scotland? Is this absurd law going to be limited just to the Scottish frontier? Or is it going to spread south into Britain generally? I mean, we've seen Labour in action on the question of woke agendas, on bending the knee to Black Lives Matters, insisting that some women have penises. Why won't they pick up the same sort of hate law which is applying in Scotland? And it's extremely alarming that this sort of culture war is spreading across the country to the detriment of everybody in the country.
Right, well, stay on the line, Trevor. Let's turn now to plans to effectively criminalise rough sleeping, because ministers are facing revolt from their own MPs over the government's flagship crime bill that would give police in England and Wales powers to fine or move on rough sleepers deemed to be causing a quote-unquote nuisance. Joining me now is former Met Police detective Mike Neville. Good evening, Mike. How can you police homeless people over sleeping rough?
Well, it's very difficult, JJ, and you'd think that the government realised the police have enough to do. You know, there's 1% of thefts get solved and 5% of burglaries are solved. So the police are obviously got other things to deal with. And you would hope if they were going to introduce this legislation that they would produce viable alternatives to people who do sleep on the street, who are maybe forced to do so. And so what we've got to give these people is that there's no excuse for being on the streets. But I fear that the legislation will be introduced. They'll expect the police to do something about it. And these alternative venues will not be introduced. And then what will happen is that we'll just carry on as normal because the police, as I say, have got more things to do.
Yeah, well, Trevor, creating new laws to criminalise the homeless, that doesn't stop people from being homeless. They're talking about giving fines up to £2,500. How do you get £2,500 from somebody who has no abode and presumably has not got £2,500 in their pocket?
Well, as we've just heard, this is a very difficult and sensitive and delicate issue to deal with, but it needs to be dealt with because we are turning into the equivalent of the San Francisco homeless tent cities. And in parts of London, if you walk up the Strand on a say 9 o'clock on a weekday morning, you'll find people sleeping in various forms of accommodation in the shop windows of shop fronts of shops all the way down the street. It has to be dealt with in a way which works. And the trouble is that just as with immigration, as soon as you identify a move to deal with it, you arouse a hornet's nest of protests from those who think that it's an evil thing to try and criminalize innocent people who are going about their business. But they are not going about their business. You've got to remember that there are a million job vacancies. None of these people are employed, as far as we know. There are plenty of jobs around for them to work for and earn a living and maybe put a roof over their heads. So the whole welfare system aggravates the problem of homelessness, plus the attitude towards families and marriage and divorce, so that people, young people in particular, find themselves almost booted out of the homes that they've lived in, and they have very little other alternative. So, look, it is a complicated problem, but it needs tough action.
Mike, we're seeing the number of armed forces veterans who are homeless increasing each and every year. It's just going up and up and up. But I don't want to see people who've put their life on the line for our country, people who've served our country bravely, now being described as a nuisance. And what constitutes even being a nuisance? Simply sleeping rough in a doorway, suddenly you're a nuisance?
I'm a veteran. I was a soldier. And what I would caution about this, there are some veterans on the streets, but there are also people who claim to be veterans. And the first question I always ask is, what was your army number before I give them any money? But obviously, if somebody has been a veteran, is often suffering from mental health issues and the like, they deserve the best form of help. And I just hope with this, there is some form of plan that not only do the councils and the sort of government bodies provide something, but there is coordination with service charities and with the Salvation Army and other voluntary bodies who can actually provide these alternative places. So there is no excuse, because Trevor is actually, you know, correct about the issues in California. We really don't want that replicated in London. And you ask me what the nuisance could be, anything, couldn't it? Being too smelly, blocking the door. What else could it be? Mm. It seems very wide and very easy to misuse. But I really do say that the police won't be able to enforce it, because they simply haven't got enough officers.
I completely agree with you. But what powers do the police already have for moving the homeless on?
Well, they use the Vagrancy Act, which was brought in 1824, you know, 200 years ago, to deal with the veterans of the Napoleonic Wars, tragically. And so the police already have some powers to deal with people and to arrest them if need be. But it's not, you're never going to arrest yourself out of homelessness. There's far better solutions, as, you know, Trevor highlighted the fact that there's unemployment and plenty of jobs going begging. So there needs to be a better coordinated effort rather than the police grabbing hold of people and putting them in the cells.
Yep, Trevor, I don't think the public are gonna like this law. I don't think we'll be sympathetic towards it. I think Britain, at its heart, is a giving country. We are very charitable. I think people are going to look at our government, our multi-millionaire prime minister, and say, you're punishing people who are already at the bottom of society. Why would you introduce a law that is hurting those who are already helpless?
Well, I don't think, first of all, that you can blame our multi-millionaire prime minister for this. This has been going on for a long time. It's been growing, and it's been imported from America, and it's going to get worse as the fentanyl drug problem sweeps across the Atlantic and we find people not just sleeping in doorways, but stumbling around like zombies. Where do you start? I mean, the welfare system is busted, and we've got no money to build new houses or any approvals for them to be built, and people simply do not want people sleeping in their doorways. I mean, why do they need to sleep in the Strand and in Bond Street and Mayfair? They are there in order to attract attention and act in as beggars. Many of them, I mean, look, some of them, as Mike pointed out earlier, quite rightly, deserve all the help and support they get. But many of them are professional beggars, and they make quite a lot of money that they then tuck away or go elsewhere. I mean, No, I won't go into the anecdote. It's too complicated. But I can tell you that there are people out there who are masquerading as homeless when they've got homes, but they walk around with shopping trolleys full of their worldly goods, and they could easily, and they already do, from begging, make a living. They could make one legitimately.
Well, look, our future king, Prince William, is making it his mission to end homelessness. I think I'd rather support that more holistic way of getting people off the streets rather than saying we're going to fine them, we're going to throw them in prison perhaps. But Trevor and Mike, thank you both for your time. You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ. It's total Tory wipeout. A new poll reveals Conservatives are on course for their worst ever general election results. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Nisyobi on Talk TV. Now, the Tories have approached their lowest point yet. A new large sample poll states they are heading for less than 100 seats at the general election, with senior ministers and even the Prime Minister himself at risk of losing his seat. Joining me to discuss this is my new cabinet, author, activist and commentator Keith Fraser, Talk TV contributor Esther Kraku, and lawyer Andrew Eborn. Good evening, cabinets.
Good evening. Welcome. How are you doing?
Welcome. So, the Tories, less than 100 seats, this is going to be complete obliteration.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? And Servation, who are talking about the starvation of the Tories, they're predicting that what have they got? Just sort of 98 seats to Labour's 468. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of reality. And I think, but an earth is an earth, talking about Easter Sunday.
An earth is an earth. Very good.
Easter Monday. But the reality is this, is that Rishi has to deliver on those five promises. And he hasn't yet called the election. He doesn't have to until the end of January. That's the very last date he can do it. And that, according to the things, those are the rules.
I think it has to be December.
Oh, no, he can call it in December. You then get the period of time.
Yeah.
The period of time when the election voting would take place
in January.
The end of January.
Yes.
So he's got time to do it. And my advice to him would be wait until things improve. So he needs to see some sort of progress in Rwanda.
Wait till things improve.
I guarantee the gap will close. The gap will close between them at the moment, as it always does. You must remember this. I always say Trump and Clinton. Uh-huh. And everybody laughed at Trump, didn't they? And I was probably one of the very few people who ever predicted that Trump was going to do it. And everybody woke up, they went to bed thinking Hillary's going to win it. We're all going to bed. We're going to sleep at night. And in the morning, there's Donald.
So what's your prediction for this one?
My prediction? Oh, Sunak's going to win massively.
I'm sorry, absolutely. Look, I think the Conservatives have a big problem because, and I've said this, they seem as detached from reality as the rest of the entire cohort in Westminster. Ian Duncan Smith came out and said that the public shouldn't vote for reform because that's going to reverse Brexit progress and it's going to usher in a giant Labour majority. And these kinds of statements, these kind of reform fear-mongering are rooted in arrogance because he's not making a sales pitch for the Tories. The Tories are not saying, here are reasons why you should vote for us. Here is our vision for the country. And I keep going on about vision, but it matters. Here is our vision for the country, and why is it better than Labour's vision for the country, or Reform, or Lib Dem? They're not actually trying to sell why they should be voted in by the public.
Yeah, they are.
They don't.
Stick to the plan. Stick to the plan. That's what we keep saying.
The thing is, but what are we getting out of it at the end of the day? How is the British public going to be better off by this 5-point plan that he's laid out like he's a school teacher, but it's not actually saying at the end of the day you'll feel better because you'll have a more cohesive communities. Healthcare will be better funded. Infrastructure will be improved. He's not saying any of that. He's just saying this is the plan and whatever happens.
Well, it's going to be better.
I've got to tell you, if this is true and it turns out to be 98 seats, God help this country, because let's face it, Labour always ruin it in the end anyway. Look, I am not a Conservative voter, like, 100%.
Okay.
But I like Rishi Sunak. This is a man who could be lying on a beach in the Caribbean if he wanted to.
He has dedicated
his life and given back to this country. He's doing a good job. He's a steady pair of hands. And he took over this country when, let's face it, we were in rough waters. Inflation is down. He is the man to the job. He's just been very unlucky because came before him, you had, you know, Liz Truss, with all due respect, way out of that depth. Boris Johnson, whose moral compass was... Well, he hasn't got a moral compass. And Rishi's been unfortunate as he had to follow two disasters.
But you say that about Boris. To his credit, it was an 80-seat majority. He was the only politician at the time. They sort of called him the Heineken of politicians. He could reach the parts of the electorate others couldn't. He's now become the Marmite character. Mm-hmm. What we need are characters in politics, which is why I say don't write it off completely, because the reality is there will be delivery on those sort of things. But you're right, Esther, you need to tell people how they're going to benefit. And the way that you're going to do it is what Edward Bernays, who was the father of PR, said. The way that you convince the public is through fear. So if you say we're making progress, we're making progress in these areas, and if you change ships at this moment or change the captain for the ship, you're not going to carry on this great progress because there's no plan for Labour, he'll continue to say. Keep sending that message, and I guarantee the gap will close.
Well, talking of ships...
Is that ship?
Talking of ships.
Oh, ships.
With a P.
Ships
with a P.
In the light,
yeah,
thank
with
you.
Ships. the migrant ships, they're still coming.
Yeah,
now past the 5,000 mark.
Yes.
A new record. So, yeah. Sunak,
He hasn't stopped the boats. I predict they will get maybe 3 flights off to Rwanda with all 5 people on them. So, that'll be another shambolic display. Look, if we're going to. Okay, let me be gracious and say he has to stick to the plan, and if it works, he hasn't done anything to bring down inflation. Inflation was always going to
come down.
So that's always been a bit of a red herring. He hasn't stopped the boats. If anything, I think he's probably rolled out the red carpet for them because they're still coming. What else did he say? Fund the NHS. Well, this week...
Cut the waiting times.
Exactly. This week it was found that over 230 people
needlessly
died because of A&E waiting times.
Awful.
So he hasn't
Absolutely
approved
awful.
It. And even actually, the list, even if we're going to give him credit, is bogus because he should have said transform the NHS or provide better... healthcare to the public.
But back to migration, because that's the record that he's now proudly got. Keith, is there anything Sunak can do about migration that's going to change the way the vote is going to...
Of course, Keir Starmer's going to say that this whole Rwanda policy is a bit of a gimmick. But in actual fact, it's interesting that they're saying if you come over, you're going to be on a plane to Rwanda. Rwanda... is doing enormous amounts of advertising at the moment to go and visit. It's not. Yeah. This is not the hellhole that people think anymore. They sponsor my football team, Arsenal.
Yes. Well,
and that can't be bad.
There you go. No wonder it's a dangerous
country. Exactly. Yeah. Well, they've got no taste.
The reality is this, though. Nobody wants to send anybody to Rwanda. The whole idea, and this is talking about the focus should be on the horrendous people traffickers.
100%.
That's the thing. What we need to do is spend the money on tracking them down and dealing with that appropriately. The whole principle, the thing about small boats is crazy anyway, because the thing, stop the boats or lose the votes. What's going to happen? Rwanda at the moment can only deal with 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of people coming in and out, there's legal migration as well. It's over 1 million people
Which
are coming in on student visas and so on and so forth. So we're missing the issue on that. What we need to do is, and what I love about this sort of show, especially when JJ does it with the crew, is that we always shine more light and less heat. If you look at the real figures, they're over 1 million in terms of immigration.
Uh-huh.
These small boats are a distraction. I know people involved who are stopping a number of people from coming over. There's tens of thousands more who are trying to do it and are getting stopped. So that's happening.
But we're going
to see... The boats are an issue.
They need to be done, and
it's a public issue.
But we're going to see more boats coming this summer.
When it gets hotter, when the weather's
exactly.
better.
More than 5,000 already people are coming. So
do we think that Sunak should call an election before summer?
No, absolutely not. He should call an election after the American election. I've always said this.
Yeah.
I think
when Donald Trump wins, you've
talked about fear. And I'm sorry, the Tories have done such a disastrous job that nothing that they do can put fear in the public because their track record has been scary enough. But they can say, look, a Rishi Sunak premiership looks a lot better if Trump wins the White House than a Keir Starmer premiership. And that is something I can actually buy into. Because
we don't
have a plethora. Where's the Brexit trade deals?
Esther, you're into politics. Do you think John in Doncaster gives a monkeys who gets into power in the US?
Of course he does.
No, they don't.
It's the largest economy in the world.
I was on the phone with Johnny Doncaster earlier today, and he tells me he cares about what Donald Trump's going to do. But you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Look at that sort of side. What we also need to look at are those other sort of elements. There will be that feel-good factor. And when I talk about fear, I'm talking about fear of the alternatives. Because at the moment, people are just voting negatively. They're not turning around and saying, oh, we're really for Keir Starmer, we're really for Rishi. It's a negative vote. They haven't got confidence. And I always say trust comes in on foot, but leaves on horseback. And trust in politicians, in our media, in our various services, is at an all-time low. What we need to do over the next few months is build that trust back up again.
But here's another thing. You know, you may have it right, Esther, because if we do wait until after the US election, the one thing that is very important is the Anglo-American relations.
Exactly.
It is important.
Absolutely.
And I cannot see
most
our relations with Keir Starmer as leader being, to be honest with you, very reliable, as opposed to Rishi Sunak, who I think will continue things and keep things on a good footing.
I think you're all wrong. I think most people, and Jonathan Goodis MP told me the same thing about his constituency in the north, in Stoke-on-Trent. Most people actually aren't that bothered about immigration as the top priority. They're bothered about potholes in our roads.
Yes.
You can't drive.
That's a local election.
Yeah, local election. They're bothered about the NHS. Mm-hmm. They're bothered about local jobs.
Yes.
And they're bothered about transport.
That means they're worried about immigration, because guess what? Unfettered immigration affects the NHS, yeah. Affects local housing, affects councils. It affects all of these things that you just listed are people's top priorities. So inherently, they do care.
And you're absolutely right. And we need a certain amount of immigration to make the wheels turn. We need certain people working in the care homes and jobs that people don't want to do.
To be perfectly honest, we need an immigration freeze, actually. The numbers that we're seeing now are so staggering that for the next 5 years, we need an actual freeze and say, let's bring it to 350,000. Let's have a certain number for certain industries. And over that, I'm sorry, you need to deal with what you have. And invest in the British public.
Okay, listen, AI
is the other thing.
The three of you put a sock in it, okay? We'll hear more from you a little later in the show, but thank you for now. You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ. Up next, the Queen of Darkness, Sharon Osbourne, on her family, the Royals, and rock and roll. Sharon, I cannot wait to speak to you. Don't go anywhere. You won't want to miss it. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ and Nisiobe. Now, she is one of the most powerful women in the music and television world. She's the other half of the Prince of Darkness. She was the OG of reality TV. And most importantly, she's my work wife. Making her debut appearance on the Independent Republic of JJ, let me welcome the one and only Sharon Osbourne. Sharon, hello.
DJ, I miss you.
Yeah, return my phone calls then, eh?
After the show, definitely.
Right. First off, how are you and how is Ozzy?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Sorry I didn't get to see you when I was in London, but yeah. I'm doing good. I'm busy packing up this bloody old house of ours and getting out of here.
So you're actually going to come back? Because for the last 3 years, you've been saying to me, we're moving back. Is it actually going to happen now?
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
Right, let's get on to something I know you love talking about, Meghan Markle. Has America come to the point where they are just sick of the Sussexes now?
I think so. I think that, you know, they've tried so many different things, you know, a production deal, their podcasts, now they're flogging household stuff. I mean, what else are they going to do? They've tried a bit of everything and nothing's worked so far.
Well, the Netflix documentary that they did, that was the most successful documentary ever on Netflix. That worked.
Well, that worked because who doesn't want to watch a spare, as he calls himself, and his missus? I mean, it's interesting TV to see another side of them.
Yeah. Well, there's one poll in the US at the moment that says most Americans want to see Harry deported, especially if it comes out that he lied on his immigration form and said that he'd never taken drugs before.
You know what? Do you know how many people lie about that and they get in here? I mean, I think that's ridiculous.
Oh, really? So you're defending Harry. You're going to say, if he did lie, it's all right. Everyone breaks the law in America.
That's right. I mean, come on. How many people lie about they took drugs or they didn't take drugs? That's it. It's the world we live in.
Well, I haven't lied. I've been to America loads. I don't lie about taking drugs. I haven't taken drugs, by the way, but I've never lied about it.
But listen, what's the biggie? He's not a practicing addict, is he?
Maybe not. I just feel that there is some special treatment around Harry. If this was someone from, say, south of the border who'd come in and he wasn't the king of wasn't the son of the king, and it turns out he'd lied on his papers, would the US be saying, right, you got to go back to your own country?
Yeah, they would.
Yeah. So it's a double standard then. Fine. Now, another question about Meghan. If she is as unpopular as we think she is now in the US, is she going to make any money from this American Riviera orchard selling pillowcases and knives and forks and tea sets or whatever?
I think it depends. Everything depends on what she's flogging. If it's good quality and it's at a reasonable price, why not? It could work.
Hmm. Well, speaking of, again, Harry and Meghan, what advice would you give them now? Because it seems like they're kind of at a crossroads. They've burnt their bridges with people here in the UK. The US have kind of fallen out of love with them. What would you advise them as a PR maestro? What can they do now to try and revive their careers, I guess?
I think they've got to stop making themselves so accessible. It's like, you know, they turn up at the opening of an envelope, and I think that they've got to really pull back and, you know, less is more, and I don't think they've heard that.
Mm, OK. Well, listen, you're coming back in the coming months to the UK. I've got a warning for you, Sharon. Stay out of Scotland. OK, do not go there.
Oh, my Lord, what is going on over there?
Yeah, so this new law means that anything that you say, even to me in private, if we're up there in Scotland and we say something behind closed doors or via WhatsApp and someone grasses on us to the police, you could get arrested and charged with a hate crime now.
It's at a ridiculously stupid level. I mean, that is just ridiculous.
It is. Well, there's some more trans news for you as well here. I don't know if you've heard about this story. Down in Australia, a women's soccer team, so it's a football team that is purely for women, and they play in a league that is purely for women. But one of these teams had 5 players who were trans. So people who were born male but now playing for a women's football team. Not surprisingly, this football team ended up smashing it. They beat one team 10-0. They didn't lose a single game. And apparently, some of the girls who were complaining about playing against men were told, if you complain, that could also be a hate crime. That could be discrimination. The world is going mad.
Oh, everybody's lost the plot. I mean, it's insanity. And the thing is, it's not people's, you know, opinion. It's scientific proof that medical science, that men are stronger than women. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you may be trans, but it doesn't alter your body. You can have your old boobies cut off and a little fiddly-diddly down there, but it still means that medically you're a man and yeah, they're stronger. And the thing is, if the football team all agree with it, then okay, they agree with it. It's not for us to comment. But I think it's all crazy. I do. Nothing against trans, nothing against them at all. But it's like if you look at what happened with the swimmers that were trans, they're, you know, they were just beating everybody. And when this person was a man, I think he was like 130th in the ratings. Yeah. And now he's, you know, winning everything. Well, yeah, she is winning everything, I should say. I don't want to get arrested in Scotland for saying
that. Right, let's touch on some more on the royals now. I can't stand him, but the Duke of York, he was out and about on Sunday accompanying his brother Charles. I really think that he should just disappear and not be seen again. But for some reason, Prince Andrew, he's walking around like he's got no cares in the world. He's everything's forgiven. He's one of the people again. He's part of the firm. What do you think we should do with him?
I think, again, a less is more. I think that he should really go into retirement. And, you know, he's just... I don't have much respect for him or any respect for him whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people of York think he should have his title stripped of him. He's lost everything. He's lost all his charity work. He's lost his army titles and everything.
Yeah, everything.
So, Duke of York should go too?
It's, but the thing is, does it mean anything when you're the Duke of York or Sussex? I mean, they're so tiny, these little places. I mean, it's like, what does it mean in the big picture of life? Nothing.
Yeah, well, look, Sharon, I'm the Duke of Dudley and you're the Duchess of Birmingham by default, by marriage.
Yes.
Of course it means something. Of course it bloody does.
You know, he's just a bit of a pillock, you know, so you just have to ignore him, hope he goes away.
Yeah, well, speaking of pillocks, Joe Biden. Listen, I think Trump's going to do it. I think Trump's going to get re-elected. I think Biden is looking shaky at the best of times, but he's in hot water again because he repurposed Easter Sunday as Transgender Recognition Day. He didn't mention Easter Sunday. He didn't mention the resurrection of Jesus. Now, from my point of view, I thought America was this God-fearing country, and that would have been what he was trying to... He should have been going all out to win over the Bible Belt instead of talking about the Transgender Recognition Day. I don't even know what that really is.
I think it's just another desperate move to go to the minorities to try and, you know, be everything to everyone. And it's a desperate attempt to reach out to trans people to say, look, I'm not against you. I love you. You can have your own day. What about Old White Women Day? When are we going to get it?
You're not old. You're just a white woman. That's all. Now, last question, Sharon. You told me a little while ago that you were going to plan a farewell concert for Ozzy. Is that still going to go ahead?
Yes, it is. It's going ahead at Aston Villa next summer.
Oh, so it's confirmed. You're definitely going to do it at Aston Villa? At the Villa Ground in Birmingham?
Yeah. And you better be there.
Well, if you actually answer my phone calls this time, then yeah, I'll be there.
All right, I will.
And when you come back, don't forget, we've got that podcast to sort out as well.
We are. We're going to do it together.
We are. We are. Right, Sharon, thank you so much. Love you.
Love you, JJ, very much. Miss you.
You too. You too. Thank you. Yeah. Bye, love. You're watching The Independent Republic of JJ. Coming up, the King is reportedly in high spirits as he's been spotted out and about over the Easter weekend. But find out... which royal stole the show? I think you can guess. Back in three. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of JJ here live on Talk TV. And now it's time for Taking the Mic. Now, when I heard about this story, genuinely I presumed it was just an April Fool's joke. Sadly, it ain't. A women's football competition has been branded misogynistic after it was won by a team featuring five transgender players. So let me make this clear and give you some context, because context is everything. This is a women's only football competition in Australia, which is supposed to encourage women to play football in a safe and inclusive space. And yet one team, the team which won the tournament and $1,000 in prize money, featured five players who were born male. So the Flying Bats... yes, that is the name of the team, the Flying Bats. They and their five male players won every game, including a 10-0 victory in which one of their trans players scored six goals. Now, since the winning team hit the headlines, it's emerged that organisers had earlier held a crisis meeting during which rival teams were warned if they forfeited games against the Flying Bats, it would be viewed as an act of discrimination. So my question is, do people not care about the safety of women anymore? Is that where we are? Men are stronger and faster. We're heavier than females. That's just biology. When women-only teams have played against men, they have been humiliated. The US women's soccer team got spanked just last year, 12-0, by a bunch of retired players from Wrexham. The US national women's team is widely considered to be the best female team in the world. And they also previously lost to 14-year-old boys. It is not fair for men to compete against women in sports, because we have that natural God-given advantage with our muscle mass and our bigger frames. We, men, will cause injuries to women if we play against them. And so if females don't want to compete against us, they shouldn't have to. That's why our sports are separated by sex. But they certainly shouldn't be threatened for forfeiting a game that puts them in any kind of danger. The funny thing about all of this is that it's women who are most likely to stand up now and scream, bigot. JJ, you're a bigot for what you're saying. It seems that protecting female sport is now less important to some than allowing men to dominate a space where they do not even belong. So, stop taking the mic. Start protecting our women. Now, it was a welcome sight seeing the King on a walkabout, chatting and shaking hands with well-wishers after attending the traditional Easter Sunday service at Windsor Castle yesterday. In a rare public appearance since he was diagnosed with cancer, the 75-year-old looked in good spirits as he was joined by the Queen and other members of the royal family. But one guest at the service, who didn't have as much of a warm reception, was the disgraced Prince Andrew. You could say he is risen and is standing firmly with the royal family. To discuss this and more, I'm joined by the host of the To Die For Daily podcast, the wonderful Kinsey Schofield. Kinsey, were you surprised to see Prince Andrew standing by his brother's side there?
You know, I understand that it's protocol, JJ, but you're probably going to get this more than a normal anchor would. There are two scripted dramas coming out about Prince Andrew. Within the next few weeks, within the next few months, we're going to see back-to-back scripted content via Netflix, via Amazon Prime, all about this BBC interview that rocked the royal family. It is not a positive reflection on the royal family. It brings them back to a very chaotic time. And I just don't understand PR-wise how he continues to slide through the cracks when I think that he is ultimately an embarrassment on the family. I mean, if he says he's innocent of what he's accused of, I'll take him at his word. But it is guilt by association, and Jeffrey Epstein is a convicted pedophile in the United States.
Yeah, that's the thing. Look, Andrew, and I believe him. I've no reason not to believe him. He says he never met the woman in question. He paid her a few million quid to settle the whole case, but he says he didn't meet her. He says that photo was a fake. He says he's not able to sweat. I believe him. He was in a Pizza Express instead. He was never at that party. I believe you, Andrew. You're not guilty. That is fine. However, you were mates with a paedophile. You knew he was a paedophile, and you flew out to hang out with him after he was convicted of being a paedophile. For that reason alone, I think he should be kicked out of the royal family and sent to some desert island somewhere to sit by himself and wallow in his self-pity. But with this drama coming out on Netflix, Scoop, about the Emily Maitlis interview on Newsnight, many, many millions more people around the world are now going to be made aware of this story. Not many people watched the original interview on BBC around the world, certainly not. In this country, a lot of us watched it, but globally, absolutely not. Surely King Charles should be thinking to himself, I'm about to get in a world of bad publicity because of my stupid brother. Why did he keep him around then?
You know, I would assume that is what he'd be thinking, but ultimately, JJ, I think that this family is closer than we give them credit for. You know, I know we're haunted by the Harry and Meghan, and I know we're haunted by the Dianas in the room and this feeling that this family can be ice cold. But at the end of the day, the fact that we continue to see Prince Andrew, the fact that they slowly have, you know, did you know that Fergie was recently in a Hallmark movie? A Hallmark. I mean, what? That is literally where Meghan Markle started her career. And Fergie has come full circle. She's getting to, you know, have her cake and eat it too. She gets to show up at church with the king, and she gets to play actress in Los Angeles. This is exactly what we're condemning Meghan Markle for. And so I do feel like perhaps this family is a lot closer than we give them credit for because of some of the issues in their past.
Why is it then that Randy Andy can still be accepted into the family fold? He's still listed on the website and everything, but Harry and Meghan, who are literally making their own money, doing their own thing, away from the royals, the public aren't paying for them anymore, they're making their own millions, but they're still getting hate. How does that work? Why does that work?
I think that that works because Harry and Meghan have been openly critical of the royal family, and Prince Andrew and Fergie have been very tight-lipped. I mean, aside from Fergie's book, where she goes into detail about how one of Princess Diana's shoes gave her warts, which is like, let's be honest, that was pretty rude. I think that Fergie's been pretty, you know, when it comes to the royal family, she's given them a lot of great press. You know, she was glowing about the queen when the queen was still alive. And so I think it's based on attitudes and how Harry and Meghan have been really critical all over the world about this family. And Andrew and Fergie, while their behavior has been highly questionable, they have not typically been critical of the family.
It just seems crazy to me that a couple of people who know the royal family inside and out and were part of the firm, they leave, they're critical of this establishment, and the world turns on them and hates them. Meanwhile, you've got Andrew, who is hanging out with a paedophile and getting paid money to give people access to the royal family, and it's like, oh, yeah, but it's Andrew. You know, they've been questionable behaviour. It's a bit more than questionable, I would say.
Yeah. No, I think that anyone that with any common sense wonders why Prince Andrew still has the access that he has, because he could still just be a welcomed family member already sitting inside the church, already inside of Sandringham waiting for everyone to arrive. He could be hidden in plain sight, and for some reason they've given him permission to be this character that is at the forefront a lot of the times. And I think that it's unsettling to a lot of us.
Well, it's 4 years since Megxit. I don't even like calling it that. It's 4 years since Harry and Meghan left the royal family. But reports are now that they are classed as the joke of Hollywood over there. Is that true?
I think that what's happened is that people have been given permission to make fun of them. When they first left and they first did that Oprah Winfrey interview, you saw people very protective of them. They really had almost a shield of victimhood. So you weren't allowed to criticize them. Remember when Bethany Frankel posted something on TikTok criticizing Harry and Meghan after the Oprah interview? And she posted another one saying, I had to immediately delete that because someone very big and powerful called me and told me I didn't understand what I was talking about and to delete it. When Harry released Spare, you saw some vulnerabilities there. And all of a sudden, people had permission to make fun of them. For instance, JJ, Meghan Markle was an influencer and was, a blogger and an Instagrammer before she married Harry. And she was respected in that environment. The Guardian recently wrote something teasing her about Harry's book, Spare, saying that if she's going to be like Gwyneth Paltrow and she's going to have some sort of goop-type product, that instead of a candle, maybe she could do a frostbitten todger cream. These are things you couldn't say 4 years ago. These are things you wouldn't have said about Meghan Markle 10 years ago. So it feels like in being vulnerable or in oversharing, Harry and Meghan have opened themselves up to criticism and opened themselves up to becoming the butt of the joke.
I think it's okay to be the butt of the joke sometimes. I think that's all right. And it shows that they're human. They're not going to put out some cease and desist order against South Park or The Simpsons for taking the mickey out of them, are they? So I think that's a good thing. But very quickly, on Meghan's rebrand and her selling todger cream, perhaps, or vagina-scented candles, do you think it's going to be a success? Is this going to make her a few million quid or even maybe many, many millions?
I think that it's a no-brainer. She does have an established audience that wants what she's selling. So I don't see that there. I don't think that there's any harm in her pursuing this. I think that if she's got a product that people would buy, why wouldn't you do it? That's America.
Yeah. And would you be buying anything from her? What has she got to sell for you to be like, yeah, okay, I'll take some of those?
I don't know, because I'm into like bright colors. I'm not really into the beige. I love Gwyneth Paltrow's. I love Gwyneth Paltrow's skincare line. So if she did something similar, maybe I would do that.
Well, you know what I would do if I was Meghan? I would take a diffusion line dedicated to Prince Harry of all weed, marijuana. It's legal over there, right? In some of your states. Perfect. That's what they should
do. Wait, JJ, she has a cousin, or she has somebody that has a Markle weed brand out here.
Oh, well, there you go. It's perfect. Kinsey Schofield, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are watching the Independent Republic of JJ. Still to come, hundreds of patients per week in England may have died unnecessarily because of A&E waiting times. Don't go anywhere. We are back after the break.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening and welcome to the Independent Republic of JJ. You're with Talk on TV, on radio, online and on your smart speaker. Coming up, more than 250 people are dying every week in hospitals in England due to long waits in A&E, say emergency physicians. Water firms are accused of committing environmental vandalism by spilling sewage into bathing areas. And fury after a women's football team featuring five trans players obliterates its opposition 10-0 in a women's league. Let's talk about the royals. I mean, seriously, are we supposed to just forget Prince Andrew's whole Epstein debacle like it never even happened? Now we're seeing him gallivanting around with the royal family like he's earned back some sort of honour. Is this what we're supposed to accept? That a man associated with such disturbing allegations can just simply waltz back into royal life as if nothing ever happened? And let's not overlook the fact that this is the first time we are seeing our beloved King Charles out and about since his cancer diagnosis. Yet, Prince Andrew seems to be the one who stole the spotlight. It's a slap in the face to decency and accountability. It's like they're saying, sure, he might have some skeletons in his closet, but let's just brush them under the rug and carry on as usual. Well, I refuse to stand by silently while they parade around pretending everything's hunky-dory. We deserve better as a country. The royal family needs to wake up and realise they can't sweep their problems under the rug and expect us to just smile and wave along with them. Well, I've got a suggestion. Why doesn't the grand old Duke of York take a one-way flight to Epstein Island and just stay there? Later in the show, we will be bringing you a first look at tomorrow's front pages. But before anyone else, we've got an exclusive look at the Sun newspaper. So, inside there, we have the headline, Defiant JK Goes to War Against Trans Zealots. That is the author of Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling. So she has basically said, addressing this, what I would call a draconian new hate speech law that's kicked in Scotland, that, yeah, she's not going to just stand around and take it. She taunted police by using the hashtag ArrestMe. She posted a series of barbs at trans women criminals and activists. So, I mean, JK is furious. She is angry. And I completely understand that, completely agree with her. She laid into Scottish First Minister Humza Yousaf and his Hate Crime and Public Order Act 2. I stand with JK on this completely. Now, South West Water is claiming it has no legal obligation to keep rivers and seawater clean of sewage, stating that even during the bathing season, there is no absolute right to swim each day. This comes as the Liberal Democrats are accusing water companies of environmental vandalism for the 228,098 hours of sewage they discharged into bathing areas just last year. I'm joined now by the director of Windrush Against Sewage Pollution, Vaughan Lewis. Vaughan, what do you have to say about a private company telling me and you and the public that we have no right to go swimming in our seas?
I don't know when anybody decided we had no right to swim in our seas or even our rivers. Whose idea was that?
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. But is there not already some kind of law or regulation in place that should stop these companies from just dumping their sewage in the rivers and the seas?
Absolutely, JJ. Of course there is. Yeah, there are strict rules and regulations that all water companies have to adhere to. I mean, this year, your figures were slightly wrong. It's 530,000 hours, JJ, this year, wow, which is up from 290,000. So you almost double. Mm. And if you put that into real time, that's 60.5 years of sewage spilled into seas and waters in the southwest region. A lot of that illegally. And across the country, in total, is 3.6 million hours of untreated sewage spill. That's 3.6 million hours. And that is just outrageous. Most of that, or a lot of that, spilling will be illegal. It's controlled by the Environment Agency, but I'm afraid the sheriffs have left the town. And at the moment, the water companies seem to be acting times of impunity. And this poke by Southwest Water back at a really decent woman, Jo Bateman, and we've had Mr. Bates versus the post office. We may have Jo Bateman versus Southwest Water now. It's a poke back and it's a cheap shot. And they really need to get their act together, as do all of the other water companies. I mean, 66% of people in Britain said that they would like to see water companies abolished and some kind of not-for-profit organisations taking their place.
Yeah, it's essentially like they're just fly-tipping. If you or I just went and dumped our rubbish down some alleyway, the cops would be onto us. But they are essentially just fly-tipping sewage into the waterways. And this comment that Southwest Water made, it's as if they are polluting on purpose. And they do not care, and they're going to continue to do it then.
They are polluting on purpose. You know, these companies have made a deliberate pollute-for-profit decision across Britain, across England anyway. It's outrageous. You know, you can see the consequences of the equity stripping that's happened across the region, with Thames Water now facing, you know, bankruptcy and extinction. Within the next few weeks, if the government doesn't step in and change the rules to protect it. They've got massive debts between 15 and 18 billion, depending on who you talk to. They're operating illegally. And some of their directors now of their parent company are leaving. They're resigning. And I think they're getting out before the deck chairs on the Titanic are finally arranged.
So what damage is this doing to our coastlines, our ecosystem? Are our fish dying? Are our waters so polluted that we can't even fish in them in some parts?
In some rivers, yeah. I mean, you know, the evidence is quite clear. You're showing some good pictures there, or some horrible pictures, actually, of sewage pouring into rivers, sewage fungus, high phosphorus levels, levels of various chemicals, antimicrobial resistant bacteria. There's, you know, you name it, we're getting it. Some of the impacts are quite clear. You see dead fish, that's immediate. That's a catastrophic, you know, acute impact. But we're getting chronic impacts, which will, you know, they'll surface over the years and we'll see it and we'll wonder who let this happen. And, you know, we know who let this happen and we need time to change.
Right, so, and why is there so much sewage being discharged?
Neglect. It's a failure to invest. I mean, 1989, water privatisation. These water companies were given a set of assets with a clean book, and they have managed to rack up massive debts, and they have taken something around £70 billion in dividends in the meantime. They've just stripped everything out. They've not invested. There's been no true equity investment in Thames Water ever since privatisation. And most of it has been managed by debt. And chickens are coming home to roost. There is no money. They can't repair it. And they're refusing to put that money in.
Well, some of the companies are saying that heavy rainfall, an unusually heavy rainfall last year, is partly to blame for this sewage overrun and everything else. But you're not buying that, then?
Well, it's either heavy rainfall or the water pixies. It's never the water companies. I mean, heavy rainfall happens. They warn us about climate change. Interestingly, the water companies grab climate change as a thing to excuse them for not having enough water in the summer. And they grab climate change as an excuse for pouring sewage into our rivers during the rest of the year. So it strikes me they can't have it both ways. And it's not climate change's fault. It's happening. We've known that for a long time. You know, you